Greetings. Happy Monday. Hope you had a great weekend. Welcome to the Steve Day Show here, live and on demand on Blaze TV, radio, and podcast. I am on location in absolutely stunning Naples, Florida. I was back here for an event at Christmas time. It was gorgeous then. It might be even more gorgeous now here as we are in the early days of spring, doing an event here tonight on faith and culture with Governor Ron DeSantis. That'll be later this evening in Naples. That's why I am here. Tomorrow, we will have our first evergreen of the year. And we told you guys that we were doing something different with the evergreens this year. We kind of do something different with the evergreens every year. But this year, we decided to do a series of long-form interviews. Joe Rogan style conversations that are going to be the majority of the show, to really get in depth with the guest, particularly with a focus on theology and ecclesiastical matters this year. So last year at this time, right before Nefarious came out, there was another faith-based film that was causing a stir and a buzz called Come Out in Jesus' Name, which sought to essentially bring back deliverance ministry into modern evangelicalism. One of the pastors at the forefront of that film and movement is Pastor Greg Locke. He will be our guest tomorrow on our Evergreen show. And we're going to go in depth on his theology, what he thinks, what he believes. Let him answer some of the challenges and critics to his ministry that he has seen. And then Todd and Aaron will chime in with their thoughts. And then you can decide from there what you think. So that'll be on tomorrow's show, the first of several evergreens you'll get throughout the course of the year with a whole host of different theological views. Back in Des Moines, where I hope to be about 24 hours from now, our good friends Todders and Aaron McIntyre. Also, don't forget that this show each and every day is brought to you by our friends over at First Cup Coffee Company. They are the Patriot-owned coffee company. But that's not why we promote them here on the show. It's because they make great coffee. And then it's because they're Patriot-owned. You know our number one rule: be excellent. You have to do a good product. You don't get the Jesus mediocrity discount. My Lord walks out of tombs alive where he was once dead. So mediocrity is not on the menu. All right? You're not allowed to suck in Jesus' name. No, you're not. But this is a great product. Shipped within days of being roasted. They put the roast date right there on each and every bag. There's a freedom, or there's a flavor for every freedom-loving American. You can't beat it. Just ask Aaron. He'll tell you. Coffee to him is a food group. So go to firstcup.com. Use the code DACE and save an additional 10% on your order if you do. Firstcup.com. Use the code DACE to save an additional 10%. And if you subscribe, you can save an additional 10% for the life of your subscription. And finally, of course, with this being Holy Week, you guys have made the launch of Why Easter, Jesus Died for Us So We Can Live Forever. I'll be talking about that book with Governor DeSantis here in Naples tonight, by the way. You guys have made this a tremendous success, and we cannot thank you enough. And if you want to get your copy available at Amazon right now, please, if you have yet to do so, leave us a review, particularly if you liked the book. I've gotten so much great feedback about it, and just very humbled to see you guys help us to spread this message and pass it on to the next generation. We can't make up for the failures of this era in total. We can't. What we can do is to do our very best to do better with what we have a sphere of authority over, or God has given us dominion over. And so that's why this book was written. And in our audience, you guys have absolutely killed it. I'm very humbled and very thankful. Why Easter, Jesus Died for Us So We Can Live Forever. You can get your copy today. There are still a few autographed copies available at signedwhyeaster.com, signedwhyeaster.com. Todd and Aaron, happy Monday to you guys. We had our NCAA tournament spring break, tons of good games over the weekend. I didn't get a chance traveling to see as many of them as I typically do, but I did see a good bit of them. Did you guys have a good weekend? How did you guys do on your spring break this year?
Well, as you know, I mentioned a while back that my friend suddenly died, and the timing of having the time off happened to coincide with having to say goodbye to him. Went up to Minneapolis, saw his wife, met his kids, said goodbye to the parents, It was beautiful and tragic, and it's making the onset of this Holy Week all the more powerful and all the more momentous. So that's how I spent my time saying goodbye to my friend.
Amen. Aaron, what about you?
Weekend was pretty good. It was fairly chill all the way around. I mean, we are now approaching 0 hour when it comes to baby watch. So I think we're at the point now where both Bella and I are just ready for the baby to be here. So it was a good weekend, though. We got to go to Hoo Hot, and shout out to whoever paid for our meal at Hoo Hot. They saw Bella was just about to pop, and they said congrats on the new addition, and they paid for our meal. So appreciate that.
So let's go ahead and mention it, because since you brought it up, if you're wondering why Aaron is not on camera right now, but is here, we are preparing for Aaron's imminent paternity leave, with Bella due for baby number two here, as he said, 0 hour. So April 8th, I want to say, is the actual due date, Aaron. So, right. So we're within 2 weeks of that. Yep. So it literally could be at any particular time. And we wanted to make sure we were prepared. We wanted to make sure we could keep doing original shows for you guys. And so the lovely and talented young Miss Victoria, who was our intern last summer, some of you may remember her, she has actually been training with Aaron for the last week or so to be filling in for him as our producer when Aaron heads off for paternity leave for a couple of weeks. And it's the first time, Aaron, you have handed your laboratory over to another. How's it going so far?
I'm not nervous at all. She's doing great. I mean, we're only halfway through her training, and she's got this down really well. So I'm not nervous at all. Neither should you be. You'll be in good hands when I'm gone.
I completely trust that and trust in her as well. So, that's why you're not seeing as much of Aaron on camera as you normally would, because he is preparing Victoria to take over for him as he heads off for a baby daddy duty here any day now, between now and early April. All right, coming up on the show today, our good friend Bob Vanderplaats is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. And I want to talk about Speaker Mike Johnson and biblical worldview. And I mean, I have been brutally harsh to him, and I think very deserved, but maybe it's not. So at the bottom of the hour, Bob Vanderplaats will join us and find out if I've gone too far and if we're asking too much. And so we'll get into that coming up at the bottom of the hour. And then next hour, your chance to ask me anything. You guys know the drill. I've not seen the questions. Todd has selected them. Aaron has the questions, and I won't see them until we answer them live on the air. That is coming up in the next hour of the show. Coming up in today's overtime for Blaze TV subscribers at blazetv.com/dace. Some news that if you follow conservative media at all, you're probably not surprised. If anything, you're surprised it took this long for this news to come to fruition. But over the weekend, it was announced that Daily Wire and Candace Owens have parted ways. This has tongues wagging within conservative media and conservative social media. We're not going to debate the merits of the separation, because frankly, we don't know anything. And we don't work at Daily Wire and don't really know the inner workings there. I mean, hell, we barely know the inner workings here where we do work, because we live in Iowa, way away from everybody else. All right. But I am curious if you guys want us to immerse ourselves in these kinds of topics. So we're going to debate that. We put it up for a poll over the weekend on our Twitter at Steve Day Show. The results are very one-sided. So we will discuss those results and whether or not these are worthwhile stories with some of your replies and explanations to deviate from our normal priorities here on the show and delve into. That's coming up in the overtime today for Blaze TV subscribers. But before we get to all of that, here is Aaron's rundown of what happened while we were away.
What happened while we were away, brought to you by $1.2 trillion. That's the government funding and spending bill that was passed over the weekend. On Friday, it passed through the House with more Democrat support than Republican support, and it passed easily in the Senate before being signed into law by Joe Biden. Shortly after the Senate passed that funding bill on Saturday, the Department of Justice announced the creation of a new center that will train law enforcement and others on how to take your guns away if they deem you mentally unstable. In the announcement, the DOJ said, quote, Alerts, the National Extreme Risk Protection Order Resource Center, will provide our partners across the country with valuable resources to keep firearms out of the hands of individuals who pose a threat to themselves or others, end quote. Meanwhile, at the border, some of the starkest visuals were born this weekend since the start of the current iteration of the border crisis. As you can see, a horde of illegals violently clashing with Texas National Guardsmen tasked with securing that section of the border. According to the Department of Homeland Security, between 400 and 600 illegals were able to breach the barbed wire border barrier and reach the U.S. Jill Biden, your thoughts.
History teaches us that democracies don't disappear overnight. They disappear slowly, subtly, silently. A book ban, a court decision, a don't say gay law. Before World War II, I'm told, Berlin was the center of LGBTQ culture in Europe. One group of people loses their rights, and then another, and then another. Until one morning you wake up and you no longer live in a democracy.
How bad are things in our society? The freaking president of Mexico, who now has the boldness to step to us and troll us. Here's Andres Obrador last night on 60 Minutes talking about the American drug problem.
You know why we don't have the drug consumption that you have in the United States? Because we have customs, traditions, and we don't have the problem of the disintegration of the family.
But there is drug consumption in Mexico.
But very little.
So why the violence then in Mexico?
Because drug trafficking exists, but not the consumption.
A couple of weeks ago, the U.S. intel community released a warning saying that attacks on large gatherings in Moscow, Russia could be imminent at the hands of terrorists over the weekend. A team of gunmen opened fire on concertgoers at one of the largest indoor concert venues in the Russian capital and set it on fire, killing over 130 people. Russian state media say four suspects have been apprehended with even more accomplices detained. Former RNC chairwoman Rona Romney McDaniel has taken a gig at MSNBC, and one of her first appearances on the liberal network, McDaniel says she's been a lib this entire time.
Do you disagree with Trump saying he's going to free those who've been charged?
I do not think people who committed violent acts on January 6th should be freed.
So you disagree with that? He's been saying that for months. Rana, why not speak out earlier? Why just speak out about that now?
When you're the RNC chair, you kind of take one for the whole team, right? Now I get to be a little bit more myself, right? This is what I believe.
Texas House Speaker Dade Phelan told Spectrum News he's not worried about those pesky new conservatives that just won election over incumbents in his chamber.
I think it can get more conservative, no doubt about it. But, you know, here's the thing. You run for election and you come up here and you sit down in the committees and you have hours and hours and hours of testimony from constituents. And you start an understanding that this perspective is a little bit different. And I think House members in the House, here in the Texas House, which is the most deliberative body in this country, in my personal opinion, they will come and they will understand that, you know, what they ran on is one thing, but governing and understanding what they need to do for the people of Texas is entirely different.
And finally, Inside Out, Joe Biden edition. Here's the Babylon Bee.
We also need Ukraine to make changes to fix the broken immigration system here.
Did we just say Ukraine?
Fix it! Somebody fix it quick!
I'm on it!
We also need Congress to make the changes to fix the broken immigration system here at home.
Oh, that was a close one, but I think we got away with it.
Shut up, you dog-faced pony soldier.
Hey, come on, man! We are a doddering old man that gets to be the president, okay? How cool is that? Who wants an ice cream cone?
All right, all of you, shut up. Whose freaking fault was that just now? Who said Ukraine needs to fix the immigration system?
Sorry.
Dementia?
Huh?
How'd you get in here, buddy?
I don't know.
You can watch that entire hilarious clip on all the Babylon Bee's social channels, and that's what happened while we were away.
I literally hated everything in that montage except the finale, which is a parody of ourselves. Aaron's montage, brought to you by our friends over at Hillsdale. If you're not disheartened after watching that, give me some of what you're taking. Seems we've lost the importance of citizenship. And that's where you can take the new course at Hillsdale, American Citizenship and Its Decline, just one of several free courses they offer. But this is the one taught by respected historian Victor Davis Hanson. It's a course that traces the history of citizenship and explains how it's undermined in America today by open borders, identity politics, the administrative state, globalization, and more. If you take this course, you'll gain a deeper insight about the connection between citizenship and freedom, and it's an insight that you can use to influence those around you on behalf of liberty and the American way of life. That's why Hillsdale's doing this. They're trying to do the same. So sign up today for Hillsdale's free online course at American Citizenship and Its Decline by visiting daceforhillsdale.com. That's daceforhillsdale.com. Again, it's a free course with Victor Davis Hanson at daceforhillsdale.com. Maybe it's just because I've had a few days off and I'm down here with my youngest daughter and my wife in beautiful Naples. But I mean, I don't know. Is it just me, Todd? I mean, that thing felt like a kick right to the short hairs watching that montage. Is it just that I'm just, tell me you're dealing with a death of someone who was close to you, had to go to a funeral. So your perspective over the weekend is totally different from mine, right? I'm in the sunshine. I'm doing long walks and relaxing, you know? So was that thing just soul crushing to watch, or was it just me because of my predisposition?
Oh no, it's soul crushing from my perspective too. I mean, just in the first two parts of it, passing that latest fiscal monstrosity, and then you see the president's wife, who clearly, that was helpful. You know, I haven't heard from her in a while, but that is a woman who proudly will prop up her husband's corpse, Weekend at Bernie style, to get that nonsense passed. She's complicit in this. I mean, you want to get somebody angry, start talking to my wife about Joe Biden. But she's not just like, you know, it's not just the power and the comfort and the status. No, she's got an agenda. And she is absolutely as much as part of the deep state behind what is going on, because as long as she's there pushing Joe forward, that, you know, that inside Joe's head thing there at the end, we need the Joe Biden. Maybe that's there later on. But she really doesn't care what happens to her husband. He's a tool in her arsenal.
By the way, homosexuality was rampant within the Nazi Party. Rampant. There was rampant amount of homosexuality practiced within the Nazi Party. But let's not let a little thing like facts get in the way of our narrative. I mean, I find myself asking myself this question a lot these days. How do you share a country with this? Okay. And all throughout that montage, I found myself asking that question. I mean, if that's your view of history, and I think for a long time, you know, pre-Windsor and the other gay marriage case at the Supreme Court, I think that we just made this determination on the right that these things were being said by the other side as just talking points. They were just cynical, you know, political ploys to rally people to vote for them. But now, given the culture and the era in which we live, where other than Christmas, Pride Month is the most corporate imposed upon time of year we have in America. Very literally everything, everywhere you would go either is promoting of it or is deathly afraid of it and passive in its face. You can see these aren't just talking points. I mean, these are proclamations. These are articles of faith. These are creedal statements. They're acting on them. I don't know how to share a country with that. That's a completely different view of history and reality, and I have no idea how to abide alongside that. As we watched the clip of the few hundred illegals trying to overrun the border at Texas there.
Is that an insurrection? Point of clarification.
Yeah, well, Exactly. My first initial thought was, don't you shoot people that are trying to, don't you shoot mobs that are trying to invade your country illegally? I mean, is that kind of like the standard operating practice, is to defend your homeland? But then you ask yourself, if they had done so, can you even imagine what the news would have been like for the last 72 hours?
Yeah, I mean, because of legislators. Like, where was he from? Texas? The explanation.
Yeah, Dade Phelan, the speaker there, they're trying to get rid of. Yeah. Yeah. I'm getting to him.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, if we're at a point now, we can't, when a mob insurrection invades the country, that the idea of shooting them to stop their invasion, we all just are like, well, you know, people lose their minds if we do that. I don't know how to share a country with that. I don't know that it's possible to have a profitable show on the right, the real right, okay, not the fake right, like be real right wingers that we are. I don't know that it's possible to be to have a profitable show on the right and to be as critical of Trump as we have been at times. Maybe it is possible. We're just one of the few that's trying it. All right, because I'm not changing my opinions for anybody unless you can convince me they're wrong. All right, I didn't get into this business to kiss your rear end. I'm not here to do that. You know, so if you think I'm wrong and you convince me otherwise, cool, but you'll have to convince me. I'm not going to automatically default to not telling you what I think. But can you, Todd, think of a single instance that Donald Trump has called for the release of violent offenders on January 6th? I can't think of a single time that's occurred.
Not in a way that matters. I mean, I can't think of one, but maybe there's something we're missing. I don't want to rule
unless
it out.
Unless the statement there is that by being there and doing and right. entering into the Capitol, that is violence in and of itself. If you're dressed up like the Minnesota Vikings mascot and you're dropping a skull Viking from Nancy Pelosi's speaker chair, that's an act of violence. Okay. But again, if that's the case, then again, I don't know how to share a country with that. That's not an act of violence. It's a protest. Might be an illegal protest. You know, we can adjudicate that. You know, I don't know how peaceably entering the people's house is an illegal protest. All right. But we can adjudicate that. Sure. But that certainly is no act of violence. None. I can't think of a single time Donald Trump has called for. And if I'm wrong, by the way, send me that. I'd love to see that. I mean, this idea that he's out there. I mean, we have been critical of him for not doing enough for the people that have been detained because of their peaceful acts that day. And now we're saying that he's out there giving blanket statements of, the people that were violent. They need to be pardoned. They need to be commuted. I don't have a clue what that is about, but they're just sitting there. And that's the former head of the Republican National Committee, by the way, just sitting there and saying this with certainty. And I got to tell you, I get a sick satisfaction out of this kind of stuff because I like justice. And would I prefer that we would police our own? Sure. But we don't. We're in the land of the judges. So sometimes it requires the hand of the Lord to use the Philistines to do the deed. Watching other employees of NBC News, high profile ones, try to knife Ronna Romney after she got that job because she was willing to knife us. Again, I'd prefer we held ourselves accountable, but you know, there doesn't seem to be much of a market for that. We want to pretend like we're victims in absolutely every situation. So sometimes it requires when you're living in the time of the judges, sometimes it requires the Philistines to take out your trash for you. But this would be one of those times. I'm enjoying NBC people turning on each other and knifing Ronna Romney in public since she got that job just for knifing us. To me, that's a do not be deceived. God will not be mocked. A man will always reap what he sows kind of a thing. So, and then that brings us to Dade Phelan, the Speaker of the House, who is in a runoff right now in Texas that they're trying to get rid of him. Just saying the quiet part out loud. Yeah, I mean, if you're down here long enough, basically, you know, the culture infects you. That's essentially what he's saying. Yeah, you just sell out once you get down here. That's what we do here. So I have no idea what my value system has in common with like any of that. I don't. I don't even, I wouldn't even presume, Todd, to know like where I could meaningfully alter my belief system without fundamentally betraying it to make it possible to share a country or a culture with that. Like I wouldn't even just, we're going to just assert things that are factually not true. We're going to admit that, well, you know, once you get down here, we basically poison you against your own constituents and your own principles. The idea of defending our own border, just, we don't even think that's politically on the table. And then the First Lady of the United States, the First Lady of the United States is speaking to the people that gave us the bake the cake bigot as a talking point, that if you oppose that agenda, you don't believe in freedom and democracy. I have negative integers, like 180 difference opposites with all of that. Like I couldn't align with that any more than I could claim my right hand is my left and my left hand is my right. I couldn't. That's not reality. Nothing there is real. Nothing. I have no idea how I would share a country with that long term. I have no idea how my daughter, with my first granddaughter, would raise a family, or any of my kids, or any of your kids, anybody's kids watching or listening, how they could possibly, if with our value system, share anything with that. Nothing. I have absolutely nothing in common with that. And in fact, I'm in fundamental opposition to like all of it. Like I'm not even like, it's not a question of, can I compromise? My worldview says I cannot. Like my worldview, in fact, blatantly says I'm to oppose these things. Like I'm here to oppose them, let alone how do we neighbor together? I have no idea, Todd. I really don't.
Well, especially when you consider that the hard question now we need to ask ourselves is how many people who went to church yesterday actually share our value system. I mean, mm-hmm. isn't that really the problem? If that many mm-hmm. people in a country founded on a creed that is imbued with what you're talking about, our value system, it should be impossible to end up where we are right now. But here we are. I just think ultimately, when you say the people are the problem, we need to go back to who the church is supposed to be, what it actually is right now, and that we simply have forfeit our birthright. And there's all kinds of people who are going to say, Lord, Lord, and they're going to get a pretty disappointing message because they're certain they're on the right side of history, but they're clapping like trained seals at a lot of this nonsense, or too cowardly to speak up and say anything at all.
Aaron, you go home to a little dude.
Yep.
You've got another little baby on the way here imminently. As you're watching all of that and listening to what we're saying in response, what are your thoughts?
I feel like in the 2024 election, I should be sweating bullets, but I'm not, because I'm not. When I look at the conservative Valhalla that's supposed to be the state of Texas, and I see their House Speaker now he is responding to legitimate, as I understand, some conservatives who actually beat incumbents in the Texas State House. So that's a good thing. That's good news. But he's basically saying, yeah, these guys don't stand a chance. Once I get them in here, I've got a program to deprogram them. When I see that in the conservative Valhalla state of Texas, and then I see the leader of the RNC for the past however many years, who was vouched by the presumptive nominee in Donald Trump, just basically saying, yeah, I didn't really believe anything that I said during the stint at the RNC. I'm like, what opposition? So most conservative, most important election of our lifetimes. Prove it.
I mean, I'm here in the epicenter of the DeSantis revolution in Florida. But keep in mind, as impressive as his dominance in that election last year was, 40% of Floridians still voted for the Stuff and Aaron's montage. Stop and think about that. 40% did. 40% said, you know what? Yeah. Mask up. Leave the kids at home. 40% did. The people are the problem. More in a moment.
Hi, it's Jason Whitlock. Have you secured your spot for Roll Call 2.0, my annual men's summit in Nashville, Tennessee? Are you looking for an opportunity to fellowship with other believers, to come together across the identity lines the left have drawn to divide us? Join me, country music star John Rich, and Blaze founder Glenn Beck in Nashville on Saturday, June 1st for Roll Call 2.0. We're going to listen to great music, eat fantastic barbecue, and hear inspiring speeches from myself, Glenn Beck, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, Pastor E.W. Jackson, and many more. Let's quit letting the satanic left sift us like wheat. Let's come together as men and talk about the sacrifices we must make to restore the unity and shared values that made our country the envy of the world. Visit fearlessarmyrollcall.com to secure your spot.
Hey, did you know that too much of your grocery store's meat aisle was imported from some rando country, probably from overseas? Yeah. The product of the USA sticker just means it was packaged in America most of the time, not necessarily raised here. That's where Backyard Butchers comes in. They're a Texas-based company that shares your values, and they're dedicated to delivering the best deals in the market on high-quality beef. Your box will include all born and raised American beef from ranches right here in the heartland of America. They deliver American-raised and harvested meat from right here in our backyards to dinner tables across the country. Backyard Butchers will only source beef and chicken from American farms and delivers the cuts right to your doorstep every month. Grass-fed, grass-finished. This meat tastes amazing. Tried one of their burgers recently. I was really impressed. It was very, very good. So cut out the frustration from the meat aisle and go directly to backyardbutchers.com. Save an extra 20% off your entire order by using the code DACE. And when you subscribe, you get an additional 10% off and free shipping for the life of the order. Just go to backyardbutchers.com/DACE. That's backyardbutchers.com/DACE. 20% off your entire first order. And if you subscribe, an additional 10% off and free shipping. You can't beat it at backyardbutchers.com/DACE. Let's bring in our good friend Bob Vanderplaats from the Family Leader. Good to see you, my friend. How are you?
Good to see you, Steve. It's not as good with you being right here, but remote works, I guess. Welcome. How's Naples, Florida treating you?
It's just absolutely beautiful here.
Yeah.
I went on an extremely long walk yesterday, got some Jesus in me, listened to some NFL draft stuff. The area is just beautiful. I mean, we went out to a nice Italian restaurant last night we took Zoe here with us to give her a little spring break, and her and mom are at the Naples Zoo right now. They have like a cruise that you can take at the zoo. All right. To see sea life and stuff like that. So they're doing that today to leave me alone while I'm doing the show. And then we've got the event tonight with Governor DeSantis talking about faith and culture. So, I mean, this is one of the most beautiful spots in the country here, brother. You know that. I mean, yeah. You're down here once a year in Marco Island. Yeah.
Well, that's give my best to the governor, and you can definitely see why Darla and I like that area a lot.
No doubt. No doubt about it. You know what? Let's I'm doing a fireside chat with Governor DeSantis tonight about faith and culture. Let's have maybe you and I do the same thing, perhaps. Okay. So earlier this year, or when was this? Last fall, Mike Johnson gets elevated to Speaker of the House. And this was after yet another motion to vacate. And now he's facing a motion to vacate. Okay. And you and I talked at the time, because all these people that we know came out of the woodwork to say what a great guy Mike Johnson is. And I don't know. I mean, you and I are, I'm not saying that we're the only people on the front lines of this, man, but
we're pretty well connected.
The amount of what's that?
I said, we're pretty well connected.
I don't know. Could you get together two people that could do a show on a major platform that are more connected in the Christian conservative world than you and I are? Probably. But it would not be easy to do. Fair? Would not be easy?
Sure.
Okay. And when I looked at you and I said, have you ever heard the name Mike Johnson in your life in this business? And your answer to me was what?
No, I haven't. I knew who he worked for, Alliance Defending Freedom. I knew Mike Ferris. I knew, obviously, Kristen Wagner. I know Kristen Wagner. But I had not run into Mike Johnson during that time frame.
Never heard the name, not right. even one time. I mean, we helped raise money for Alliance Defending Freedom on this show just a couple of years ago. You mentioned Mike Ferris. I've known Mike Ferris for 15 years. More. I've never heard the name Mike Johnson once. He'd been in Congress for what, like 8 years?
8 or 10 years.
Yeah, which means he really hadn't been a part of like any major fight on any policy at all. I don't call grandstanding on the abuse of Donald Trump as a major fight. Let me rephrase, as a major policy fight. There's a whole lot of people with R's after the name that have figured out they can just knife us right in the heart on every substantive vote they want. And if they, you know, just say witch hunt to Democrats once, it's completely forgotten. All right. So, I mean, I can't think of a single policy fight he was ever involved in. And now he's Speaker of the House. And there were a lot of people, and I'm like, I can't think of a time that someone was said to have represented my worldview in public office, and I had no idea who they were. And then they were given this massive promotion that it worked out. I can't think of a single time that it worked. Okay. So, but people told me, Steve, you're too harsh. Okay.
Give them the benefit of the doubt.
So we'll let it play itself out. Well, this guy has failed to fight on everything possible. And in some respects, I mean, we're back. Nothing's changed from, you know, I know you were telling me you ran into John Boehner down here in Marco Island a couple times. Okay. So, you know, we went from a chain smoker to a CrossFitter to a technocrat to biblical worldview, but we're doing all the same stuff, largely passing budgets with a majority of the minority votes, caving on everything, negotiating against yourself, surrender caucus, failure theater. We're going back to Boehner now, Bob. That's like a decade. Nothing's changed. Absolutely nothing's changed. Now, what is biblical worldview about this? I'm asking. Is there something I'm missing? Am I asking too much because he has like no majority to work with at all? But I listened to my buddy Congressman Chip Roy, and he's like, we're not even trying to cut deals here. We're not even trying to do leverage. It's just basically whatever Democrats want to keep keep government open, we'll do. You know, no matter what. And so what is biblical worldview about giving the spirit of the age absolutely everything it wants when you have power to not do that? What am I missing, Bob?
Well, let me say a couple things. First of all, I shouldn't even say in his defense, but I'll just acknowledge leading that Congress has got to be exceptionally difficult. I totally get that. However, if they're going to have a vote to vacate the chair, have the vote to vacate the chair before the right reasons, to stand up for the issues. I mean, I loved what Reagan said in his farewell address when he said, we did it. We didn't just mark time. We made a difference. With Governor Kim Reynolds, I'm going to take shots from everybody anyhow. So I might as well take shots for the right reason. You know, doing school choice, taking on the area education agencies, doing a lot of things, standing up for, you know, Save Girls Sports, a lot of things like that. She's been taking the shots for the right reasons. And so for Mike Johnson, and again, I don't know him. And my guess is he's a really, really, really nice guy.
I guarantee that's true.
But the fact is,
Yeah.
But the fact is, you've been given a mantle for such a time as this, when government is exceptionally bloated and we are going to be basically funding the LGBTQ agenda in this. This is a time to take a stand, and one on moral ground, but two on fiscal ground, on economic ground. Expose Biden versus having now them to say we're going to expose Mike Johnson and say we're going to vacate the chair on this. So to me, if I was going to have a vote to vacate the chair for somebody to vote me out of office, I'd want it to be done for the right reason, that I stood my ground on a biblical worldview, a biblical foundation, what honors God and blesses people. It's not that difficult. But instead, now they're going to say, let's vacate the chair because, as you mentioned, the old boss or the new boss looks a whole lot like the old boss.
Walk me through, and I'm asking these questions because I'm trying to find some benefit of the doubt. Because I will tell you, I mean, I just see flat out quizzling behavior here. So I because I respect some people who told me what a great guy this guy was and what a true champion he was, I'm just trying, I want to make sure I'm not missing something. So walk me through how you are third in line to the presidency, and whether you have a majority of one or 100, literally not a nickel out of the Treasury of the United States can be spent or printed without your consent, according to the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you consent to every evil this government is currently involved in, continuing to be funded, and then you go out in public and voice stern opposition to the things you are literally writing the check for. Help me and our audience to understand what's the nuance here. What are we missing? Because I got to tell you, man, that just all the words I'd come up with to describe that are not nice. So what are we missing?
Well, Steve, I think it's where the American public is that, you know, kind of like what difference does it make? Who holds the chair? Who holds the office? We keep doing the same thing. The question you ask could also be applied as we apply all the time. So if we're going to apply it to, say, President Biden, saying you're a member of the Catholic Church who believes in the sanctity of human life from conception to natural death, and yet you're willing to fund abortion up to the time of birth without parental consent and have taxpayers pay for it. If we're willing to call you out on that and saying, listen, the church should seriously be considering excommunicating you for those type of leadership. We're very big on saying that. But now you take a look at, you know, Mike Johnson is one of us. I mean, he believes like you and I believe. But then to fund the things that are in that bill, I mean, these are ridiculous amounts. And for what? I mean, one is America is fed up with funding all this nonsense anyhow. But then two is why would we agree to it versus exposing it? I mean, I think while you're having the speaker's chair now, it's easy for me to say, I'd like to believe I would do it. I'd like to believe that you would do it. To say when I got that bill to expose all this nonsense and say, you know, I'm not going to fund it on moral grounds, but for sure now on economic grounds. Can you imagine, Steve, for 1 second what Nancy Pelosi would say if there was something in the bill that funded the family leader in any way, shape, or form to do our mission? She would blow a gasket and she would light up the left like crazy. Like, look at, they are funding these radicals who believe in marriage between one man and one woman, who believe that boys should play boy sports, girls should play girl sports. They should use the right restrooms. They believe in religious liberty. She would go nuts on that. And yet we continue to fund this culture of the age. And it's like, but I still believe. So I don't know how you reconcile that. I'm with you. I don't know how you. So it's not only about understanding it. I think the harder thing for me to be as a leader, because there's a time when you go home alone and it's just you. Mm-hmm. And you go to bed, you put your head in the pillow at night. Hopefully you bend the knee before you put your head in the pillow at night. But you have to reconcile this. You have the mantle of leadership now. And you're going to fund this stuff? That, I think, is where Chip Roy and others are saying, I'm just going to call it out because it is nonsense, and it is nonsense. And the other thing is, I believe it's a winnable issue in the electoral debate on economic grounds. Forget about the moral grounds, because I guarantee there's a lot of people who don't believe like we do, but would say, you know what? We're not funding drag queen shows. We're not funding this. I mean, we're just not doing it. Whether you believe you should have them or not, the government shouldn't be responsible in funding it.
I've got about 4 minutes here. Let's close with a discussion of this. How is it possible to wield the amount of power Mike Johnson does while claiming you're doing so from a biblical worldview, and yet for as long as he has done it, we cannot come up with one objectively good thing that has occurred because he is Speaker of the House? How's that even possible?
Well,
and then
The first thing, just real quick, see, the first thing I would insert there is I'm not so sure. I know he has said he believes in a biblical worldview. He's a Christian. I don't know if he's ever made the comment of saying, and that forms my decisions on budgets and on leadership in Congress.
He actually did. He did an interview when he took over as Speaker, and they said, hey, you know, what's your belief system? I'm a biblical worldview guy. He said that.
Because yeah. Then I don't know how you reconcile it. Because there are some.
I don't think you can.
There are some, yeah. And you know them just like I know them. Listen, I'm going to keep my faith out of politics. And I'm like, what the heck? They're definitely inserting their faith into politics. They're inserting their worldview into politics. And to me, this is something that the founders gave us. You know, the laws of nature, the law of nature's God. There is a God. We're not it. Therefore, we'd be a lot better off to mold towards his principles and precepts, which would honor him, bless a country, and that's where we'd find our unity as well. This is an opportunity like none other for Mike Johnson to stand up and point out, you know, why we are so adrift as a country, why there's so much chaos and division, instead of calling the nation back. Right now, this would be a great opportunity and use that budget as the flashpoint of calling the nation back to God. A lot of us are praying for revival in the country. We're praying for a guy with his platform and his microphone to actually say these type of things.
Amen. Final thing. Got about 2.5 minutes here. Let's go back to election night 2022. Very disappointing. Relieved, hey, at least they won the House. Small majority, but came out of this with something, not nothing, right? Knowing what we know now, make the case for me we would not have been better off if Democrats had just won the House. Because we would have gotten all the same stuff we're currently getting, would have actually got probably at a more accelerated rate, which would have hurt more people and turned more people against it. And furthermore, they would have had to own it all. Like, our people's fingerprints wouldn't have to be on this murder weapon at all. It would be very clear who was responsible for all the printing of money continuing, all the inflation continuing, all the debt continuing to mount. They would own it all. Now, we just elected a bunch of people to give them a human shield to deflect off of and confuse the message for this election. We'd have been better off not winning the House. Wrong or right?
Well, the one observation I make is that if you would have lost the House, we're way better at screaming in the minority than we are at leading in the majority, right?
Yep.
So maybe if we would have screamed loud enough in the minority, our election chances in 2024 would be much more increased. And it'd probably benefit, say, the nominee being President Trump or whoever else it might be. The only takeaways I take away from election night, November of 2022, are some of the governor races, like with Ron DeSantis and Governor Kim Reynolds. But again, I'm just trying to think, when are people going to wake up? They rewarded these people for leading by principle and taking on the tough subjects of the day. And so to me, why we're trying to avoid this and say, well, they'll be better off in 2024. No, I think they're just going to like somebody who's better at doing this than we are.
Good to see you, my friend. Thank you.
Good to see you. Enjoy Naples.
We are. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Hard not to. Absolutely beautiful place. Folks, I have no idea what good it did having Republicans win the majority of the House. Knowing what we know now, would have been better to have the Democrats in charge. They functionally are. And we would have gotten fundamentally all the stuff we're currently getting. We just would have had more flamboyant and acute amounts of it, but the consequences for that we could have solely blamed on them. There was nothing to gain at all. I don't know how you could make a case otherwise, and that's sad. All right, back here for hour two, live and on demand on Blaze TV, radio, and podcast. I am Steve Dace here in beautiful, absolutely stunning Naples, Florida. I'm doing an event later today on faith and culture with Governor Ron DeSantis for Easter week. Todd and Aaron are back there in Des Moines. You are wherever you are, and you can let us know. via the SteveDace.com inbox. Take advantage of that by emailing us, steve@stevedace.com, D-E-A-C-E, like us on Facebook, MeWe, and Gab. You can also follow us at Steve Dace Show on Twitter, Gitter, Instagram, and TikTok. And then finally, if you are a podcast listener, we appreciate you so very much because you're a big part of why we get to continue to do what we do here. If you wouldn't mind, leave us a 5-star review if you like the show. And then for those of you who haven't done this yet too, hit subscribe, or if you're on iTunes, follow. And that way, every time we do a new episode, it will show up in your feed every single time. And thanks to all of you in the podcast audience that have done both of those things. Thanks as well to our friends over at Constitution Wealth. They are the Patriots' choice in wealth management. I know a lot of you are looking to be discriminating consumers these days. You're looking to avoid doing businesses with people who offend, if not outright, are attempting to eliminate your value system as much as you can. Can't do it as much as we'd like to in our culture today, but there are certainly areas where we can do that. But why not apply the exact same thing to your portfolio, to your retirement? You can align your investment money with your values. You can be both profitable and prophetic with our friends over at Constitution Wealth. They can help you build a solid investment plan that reduces your investments in things like ESG, DEI, woke schemes, otherwise known as doctrines of demons, and more. Your opportunity to help work with them to build the parallel economy by working with an investment firm that's composed of professionals who are patriots just like you. Work with an advisor who shares your conservative patriotic values. Why work with anyone else? So if you have $250K or more in stock and bond investments, you'd like to reduce your exposure to the spirit of the age, go to constitutionwealth.com/Steve. Again, that's constitutionwealth.com/Steve. Once again, constitutionwealth.com/Steve. And with that, it is time for some Ask Me Anything. Aaron has been given the questions courtesy of Todd, who has selected them. I have not seen any of them. Todd, anything you should warn me about ahead of time? Anything to be on the lookout for? Or should we just let it rip?
Oh, let it rip. That's how you like it anyways. I can't believe you even would start us off like that. What's this all about? Are you too comfortable down there in Naples, Steve?
I am. Very easy place to get very comfortable in, I got to tell you. Yeah, very easy place indeed. I mean, last night, Todd, I was outside until 10:30 at night on my iPad, sitting outside in their outdoor lobby watching March Madness last night. Yes. In absolutely perfect weather. You can get very comfortable down here. You can. All right. So let's get salty. All right. Snotty questions hopefully went to the front of the line. Aaron, fire away.
We will begin with Ann White going to our first school board meeting Monday night to speak against books being purchased for the libraries. You know the ones. Any wisdom on controlling our emotions? And then paired with this one from Sandra Marie, how do you deal with your anger at what is being pushed onto our children these days?
Well, I would urge prayer beforehand for sure. I mean, if you guys think I can get unhinged now, imagine what would happen if I didn't step aside before every episode or before every time I publicly speak and pray. I mean, every time I go do a speaking event, I go find the corner stall in the men's bathroom and I get prayed up just to, you know. Get myself centered, try to empty myself as much as I can so that it's not about me as much as I can possibly make it. And I would urge the exact same thing. I think asking for control of your emotions is good. I don't think you have to abandon them. I mean, God gets angry. God gets frustrated. I mean, those emotions come from your creator. The question is, are we able to channel them into something that is constructive instead of destructive? So I would absolutely make sure to get prayed up. And the prayer that has worked for me more times than not is that it's just not about me. You know, if you like to pray with scripture, what Paul says in Romans 12. And these guys don't think we're going to get to Romans 12 until next year. We start that study this week. Okay. But offer your bodies as a living sacrifice. holy and pleasing to God. So, you know, I want to be a vessel. And when I speak, I want, you know, want the Spirit to come out, not me. And that Spirit could get angry. Just as long as in your anger, you do not sin. But I would be looking to not control my emotions, but to channel them. And I would ask myself, you know, what, when I want to pray in a way that when I walk out of there, if that's the last thing anyone on earth hears me say, then my Creator will say to me, well done, good and faithful servant. That's what I would do. But I don't think we have to abandon anger at all. I think, in fact, anger has motivated a lot of righteous deeds throughout human history. It's just, you know, do we use it as an excuse to sin or not? We can use anything. I mean, God gave us a command to rest. And yet, one of the things we talk the most about on this show is our addiction to comfort. There's nothing wrong with resting. Nothing wrong with Sabbathing. I mean, there's nothing wrong with taking days off from work to glutton to watch March Madness or football. The question is, what did you do before those days? I mean, did you redeem the time? Is the Sabbath the exception? Or is that the metric by which your life is measured? And it's actually the things that I toil for and struggle for and strive for and endure for that are the exception. You know, it's, I think a lot of you are coming away with this idea, for example, that Todd is like anti-sports. I mean, sports has been like a fifth child in their family for the last how many years? It's been an ample part of their lives. As a family, they've literally traveled the whole country with their daughters as part of athletic endeavors. But it plays a role. It's not the prime directive in and of itself. They're not, you know, working, you know, just so they can then take these Sabbaths, meaning that the work, I'm just punching a clock, marking time so that I could get to do what I want with my time. You know, so even when we're commanded to take a Sabbath, we can turn that into an idol. You know, so comfort and anger are two completely different emotional responses, and yet we can abuse both. And that just goes to show you, neither one of them are inherently bad. We are. We're inherently bad.
So, Todd, I'm sorry. I saw you added an additional question on this opening salvo, but I think it dovetails nicely to what Steve was talking there. This is from Russell Keerley, who says, at what point in the biblical context is it okay to use violence against tyranny?
I think you have the scriptures clearly imply that you have a right to self-defense.
Want to move on from that?
I linked all three of these together because I think odds are that people listening to our show and asking these questions are probably Christians, and you know they're on the edge one way or the other. The anger, violence, when is it appropriate? When to actually shoot is a little bit more specific, but when there's a theme at work, I really like to highlight them. I would just say this. I think everybody asking these questions should actually go back, and Steve just interviewed her last week. It's about raising children, but maybe you should read the book too, Abigail Schreier, because it's about how emotive we've become. I think instead of worrying so much about your emotions, maybe you should realize this anger is biblically has you over the target. I think we're trying to talk ourselves out of how bad things are, how maybe a nice dulcet tone will still take care of things. No. And what it maybe reading that book will help you, because we're acting like petty little children in many respects. We have many reasons to be angry, righteously so. So constantly thinking that somehow, some way, our Christian Zen is always, you know, when we're talking like the person on NPR. No. We've got to get over that.
I agree. I also think we have an even, I we used to say on this show when people asked about a third party, I used to say, well, I'd like to see what a second party looks like first. If you want to, ask me, because I don't believe violence is never the answer. If you believe violence is never the answer, then I don't know what the hell we're celebrating on July the 4th then. What are we doing with that? Why do we have a parade in the streets on VJ Day and VE Day? Why do we do that? That's a mind-numbing statement. Okay, it makes no sense. It's just not accurate when it comes to human history or human nature. But before we, but similarly, like when I used to say, before you talk a third party, let's see what a second party looks like. Before you start asking me, when does it require the times to try men's souls? Why don't we try actually utilizing all of the various peaceable means to push back on all of this that we have that we don't? Guys, we just had a caucus in Iowa. One of the reddest states in the country. One of the most astute electorates in America. The electorate, frankly, that gave birth to this show. There's no such thing as the Steve Day Show on the Blaze without what this show and the people of Iowa were able to do together in another time and place. Just would not have happened. That's what put me on the map. We're being told this is the most important election of our lifetimes. And for the first time in my career, I was even saying it. 14% of Iowa Republicans showed up to vote on caucus night. 14. 14. We are seeing polls where the two most combined, most well-known presidential candidates in American history, and I wouldn't even know what second place would be. They're like barely getting 40% apiece. I saw Frank Luntz say over the weekend that if they start confiscating Donald Trump's private wealth, if Letitia Wright starts trying to do that, she'll tip the election to Trump. That should be the case, actually. That should be. I don't think people care. I mean, it should be the case. I don't think there's a single one of your suburban neighbors or mine who didn't vote our way the last few elections are going to be suddenly like, well, you know, the guy I don't like, they're taking away his, you know, Park Avenue penthouse. That's my last straw. We haven't come close to exhausting the peaceable constitutional means we have. We haven't come close to it. We haven't. We haven't even approached it.
Yeah.
We had one school board cycle where a few dozen parents would start showing up and the feds wanted to label them terrorists. And we just stopped going to the school board meetings all over again. I mean, I don't know what to say to that. Okay. But this isn't Boston 1774, guys. We're just lying down, taking it. Now, I know there are a lot of you in this audience that are very frustrated when we say that, because if you're tuned into this show on a regular basis, you're probably not one of those people, right? This is not a place where I just want to get my right-wing outrage on and own the libs while I'm mowing the lawn and be told that we'll win the next election and save America again so I can go back to my Pleasant Valley Sunday. Chances are, you know, if that's you, you're in a real minority in this audience. Because we just don't make this show accessible for you on any level at all. We just don't. So if that's you, either we'll end up inspiring you to do better or you'll hit the eject. Because you just can't like passively listen to this show as an outrage experience for my right-wing frustrations. It's not what we do. It's not what we're about. We challenge too many of your conventional wisdoms. We just don't heavy pet you or rub your belly. All right? So I know there's a lot of you are like, we're doing everything we can, because I'm going to get 50 emails from people telling me that here in the next 10 minutes. But, you know, I understand that in this audience, there's going to be a lot of the people that God said to Elijah, there's 7,000 men in Israel who haven't taken the knee to Baal yet. I know that. I know. Okay. But on a broad scale, this audience, man, is a speck of dust in the grand scheme of things, as much as it's grown. In the grand scheme of things. The people are checked out. Just completely checked out. And their elected representatives are a byproduct of that.
Moving on.
They symbolize that, I should say. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Aaron.
Moving on, we go to Jonathan Mole. On a lighter note, and to make Todd reach for the pistol, if aliens are real, which movie or TV show most accurately depicts their existence? Jonathan says his vote is for Stargate SG-1.
I don't think Todd can go for the gun because you picked this question. I would not have even known it existed.
Don't question my motives or what I may or may not do.
Or maybe you want to turn it around and use it on yourself because you did so. Okay.
Since you're there, you're safe.
I'm trying to remember because, I mean, I think I saw Stargate in, like, the movie. I never saw any of the TV shows. I saw the original movie, like, James Spader. When was that? Like 1994?
Yeah, Kurt
95.
Russell. Yeah.
Yeah. And apparently, if I'm trying to remember, this was like a wormhole gateway either to another dimension or, you know, a part of the universe, that there was other intelligent life that they could bridge the divide where we could go back and forth. Is that right? It's been a long time. I don't remember. Do you remember, Todd?
Yeah, that's vaguely right. I mean, I don't remember who the aliens were or anything like that. It's been a long, long time.
I'm going to say if there is intelligent life outside of the Earth, it is more likely to be hostile than anything else.
All right. Next up, we go to Bill Way, who says, I drive a truck and listen to audiobooks when I'm not listening to your podcast. I'm currently listening to The Book of God by Walter Wingren Jr. Have you heard or read of this book? If so, do you think it's a good representation of the Bible? It was described as the Bible in novel form.
So a paraphrase. I've not heard of it. Several years ago, I read Eugene Peterson's The Message, which is one of the best-selling paraphrases that's ever been done. And if you're just trying to get into it to understand the narrative of it, I can see value in it. But as you grow in your faith, you'll have no appetite for those. I mean, you're good. You'll want it straight, no chaser. But, you know, if you understand that this is kind of remedial Bible, and anytime you attempt to put the Bible into a narrative, you're putting your own spin on it. That's impossible to avoid. So you just know that going in, you know, I wouldn't be preaching out of these things and I wouldn't go to a church that did, but you know, I could see they could have value, you know, just like a remedial math class can have value in helping you to kind of get some of the, you know, the fundamentals before we actually start teaching you the real math. This one in particular, though, I have not heard of. Therefore, I can't give a recommendation. I've never even heard of the author, so I can't give a recommendation one way or the other. Sorry.
Next is Jacob McGrath, who said, this last fall, I had the conviction to start attending our church's men's group. In that time, our priest had us read Brave New World, and we're finishing up Mere Christianity. I grew up in the church, and I'm trying to deepen my faith. What works besides the Bible and Catholic catechism would you and Todd recommend for a husband and father trying to strengthen his armor against the spirit of the age?
Well, first of all, props that you have a church that has a men's ministry, number one, because a lot don't. And the reason why is because you can't just have a men's ministry where we just discuss things into perpetuity. I mean, look at your question. You're already like, all right, what's next and what do we got to do? Men are results-oriented creatures. We care deeply about relationship, but we are, bottom line, a result-oriented creature. Women care deeply about results, but they are a bottom line relationally driven creature. So they can get together and find value in an endless amount of sharing of life experiences, encouragements, laments, etc., because they're relationally driven. Men are results driven, right? This is also why a man will typically, and if you find one, don't marry him, will not typically want to just say, I want to just come home and complain about my job and have you just listen. A woman will, because she needs that relational connection. Okay? A man will not do that, ever. Should never do that. Dude code violation. If he's bringing it up, it's because he's looking for a solution. Okay. And he's in fight or flight mode. So a lot of churches don't want to have vibrant men's ministries because they don't want to have men who are vibrant and active, because then they end up going back to the church and demanding the church do the same. So first of all, props to your parish for having that, and to your priest for encouraging it. That is not common in this day and age. The church is extremely effeminized in this day and age. Docile, fragile, emotional, relational, non-confrontational, etc. On purpose, so that, you know, we can remain comfortable. But I will tell you a few things over the years that have blessed me a lot. I can't remember the name of the author, but kind of the book that is often considered with launching the modern men's ministry. It's from the late 80s, called Man in the Mirror. I'd highly recommend that. Even though it's from the late 80s, it's still extremely applicable in this day and age. Another book that's now, man, probably close to 20 years old is John Eldridge's Wild at Heart. I think that also is a pretty seminal work. And then I would honestly just, you know, particularly for you as a Catholic, you should have a lot of this material at your fingertips. But I mean, I would be studying like the wisdom of the early church, studying the wisdom and theology of those who came before the current effeminate era of Christendom. But those are some things I would suggest. Todd, do you want to chime in on this at all?
I think it's incredibly encouraging that you're reading something like Brave New World, because that means your priest wants you to live an applied faith, a critical thinker. This is a fictional universe. Mm-hmm. What do you think about its ethos, how it's lived out? Because then you're also reading Mere Christianity. The bridging that gap is fascinating. Somewhere in the middle, there is real Christian history. As a Catholic, I would suggest a book called Triumph, 2000 Years Faith is the subtitle, but it kind of reads like an Indiana Jones novel, very action oriented. What people did, how they lived it out.
Let me add something to that too. Something we'll talk about on Thursday when we do Introduction to Romans. So our Romans Theology Thursday series begins this week. And on Thursday, we're going to do an introduction to the book of Romans, and we'll discuss it some there too. But Romans is written at a time in what's known in ecclesiastical analysis as a negative world. Okay. Meaning that the larger world and culture is hostile to Christianity. So when this country was founded literally in a positive world, it was founded literally by Puritans and who we call pilgrims today, but it was founded by people specifically from a Christian impulse. And then that impulse, combined with the broader biblical post-Reformation influence in the world, was really imbued the common worldview at the time of America's founding. And that kind of language and those kinds of references, therefore, are replete throughout our founding literature, documents, artwork, public displays, treatises on government, etc. Okay, so the country was founded in a positive world. And this culture was largely positive to Christianity until, I'd say the boomer generation. And then it was a neutral world. Right, so now we have the rise for the first time, really. Didn't mean that, you know, Christianity was doing great in America, perfectly batting 1,000 all those years until then, but it was the most positive influence in Americana. But now we have the birth of this thing called the counterculture. And for the first time, there is a clear cultural metric being created that is rising to challenge the influence of Christianity. And once we get now into the 70s and 80s, this alternative worldview had reached enough standing that now we're living in a neutral world. All right. So many schools, many, you know, corporations and those sorts of things go from marketing to us, or at least giving lip service to us, to we're staying out of it. You guys figure it out. We don't want any part of it. Not our fight. We're neutral in this. OK, and so this is how we went from, you know, this all happened really. And really, if you're Gen X, it happened. The playing out of this has happened in your lifetime. You remember going to school and singing Silent Night in your public school Christmas program. And then like a few years after you graduated from school, they didn't do any Christmas programs. And now they're, you know, doing winter solstice programs and singing the Gaia because we're in a negative zone. And the neutral zones never last long. OK, they always are setting the stage for what's going to come. OK, and so now we're in a negative zone. So we were neutral 70s, 80s, well into the 90s. It was acceptable to have public displays of Christianity, but you weren't going to have the culture in and of itself promulgating them or promoting them at an institutional level. Now we are in a negative world. All right. Where those institutions and the culture in a broader sense are hostile to it. They will now seek to you are not rewarded for expressing this viewpoint. You're not given a benefit of the doubt for expressing this viewpoint. This is, by the way, how the world has largely operated with Christianity going back to its very inception, okay, from Good Friday to the resurrection, right? You only need a resurrection because somebody got killed. So it was born into a negative world. It's largely thrived and spread throughout a negative world. What's happened here in America is the longest sense of positive world in the history of Christianity. But now we're done with that. We're in a post-Christian culture. We're in a negative world now. And so that's why I think studying things like Brave New World, if you're looking at recon, what is this negative world and what does it think? And what is it? What are its presuppositions? I think it's valuable reconnaissance to study that, to study the influences of the culture that you are attempting to infiltrate, and then ultimately to conquer in the name of Christ. Okay, so in a negative world, there's value in that, in my view. Provided that, and this is a theme that Paul will talk about a lot in Romans 2, provided that you can go into these enclaves, but it doesn't cause you to stumble at the same time.
There is one book that I thought of, and obviously I don't have as much wisdom parenting as these two guys do, but obviously your actions are going to be the biggest answers to questions children will have about your faith. But there is one good book from our old friend Alex McFarland, wrote about a decade ago. I think it's called 21... Toughest Questions Your Children Will Ask About Christianity. And it sounds like, Jacob, you're laying the foundation of your worldview well. But if you want to cut to the quick with some common questions or maybe objections to the faith, I'd say that's a good resource for you. One more question real
quick. Alex McFarland, I'm glad you brought up his name. Excellent resource when it comes to reaching the next generation with the gospel. He is an excellent resource. Yeah.
One more real quick here before we get to the break. Roger Fritz says, I had an evangelical coworker tell how there is an effort to translate the Bible into Klingon. He thought it was sacrilegious. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think I'd probably agree. Yeah, it doesn't do anything. It's a fictional race of people that doesn't exist. It's syncretistic. There's no value in it whatsoever. None.
Waste of time, way too comfortable.
Yep. That's another angle. I mean, this thing is burning, all right? You're not a monk at a monastery, man, all right? You got nothing but time to, like, hand-print copies. The country's literally burning down, and you've got time to translate the Bible into Klingon? No, you don't. I promise you don't have time for that. You don't. So, no. Not if you want to live long and prosper. Huh? See what I did there? Huh? Yeah? No. For about a decade now, Patriot Mobile has been America's only, American mobile phone company. And when, trust me, when I say the only ones, do you look at the commercials, the only ones are running? Yeah, pretty much the only ones. So that's why we're aligned with them. But really, it's more so because it's a great product. Our own family, our clients at Patriot Mobile, they've been terrific to us. I've heard so many great stories of their outstanding U.S.-based, meaning you can understand them, customer service team from all of y'all in our audience as well. Make the switch today. You don't have to give money directly to people that hate you anymore, at least when it comes to this product, which is one we all pretty much have to utilize in modern America. Make the switch today. Anytime you need to, when you're a member of Patriot Mobile, you can switch to any of the networks within their network that works best for you. If you're a veteran or first responder, let them know when you go to make the switch. They've got extra special ways to say thank you for your service. Every one of us, though, can use My Name Steve as an offer code to get a free activation when you go to patriotmobile.com/Steve. Again, head over there now, patriotmobile.com/Steve. That's patriotmobile.com/Steve. All right, let's get back to some Ask Me Anything, Aaron.
We will begin or resume with Sam Jens, who says, what are the top five things you're going to do to spoil your new granddaughter?
Top five things I'm going to do to spoil my granddaughter. Let's see. Wow. Narrowing it down to five. Let me see. Christmas. Birthday. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, second breakfast. That's six. Then you got to throw in Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We're at 13 ways. Whatever I can. That's what I'm going to do.
Next, we go to Sharon Stanley, who has a question on eschatology.
Oh,
she says, it was once pointed out to me that there do not seem to be any biblical prophecies that have direct reference to the United States or anything to do with the Americas. We know that many nations have risen and fallen in importance and influence through history. Therefore, might we expect that the United States as a nation, in the form we grew up with, may not exist at the time of the second coming of Jesus?
I think that you could absolutely make that presupposition, or that if it does, it just largely goes with the flow of what's trending in the world at that particular time, but plays no prophetic significance or significant to prophetic role whatsoever. So it largely doesn't exist, or it just doesn't play a role in those events whatsoever. And absolutely. Yeah, I mean, this idea that we're not special. There's only been one special country ever, and it kept making the mistake believing it was special, so it was chosen. No, it was chosen, which is what made it special. We're not a special country. We used to be an exceptional one. Whether we're going to remain so much longer is really the debate. Yeah, you know, I said this. I was speaking at a pro-life banquet in the Missouri Capital City last week, and I'll say to you guys what I said to them. You know, there is still a country called England. It's a husk of the country it once was. Muhammad has been its most popular baby name in its most populous city, going on 20 plus years in a row. With the exception of the money they waste on the royal family, still pretty much none of its other venerations, traditions, heritages, legacies that once made it the empire the sun never set upon, relevant, don't exist. The Archbishop of Canterbury is basically a Muslim. So there's a country called England. There's a husk there. But what's happening on the inside? It's a whitewashed tomb. Nothing's happening on the inside. People that lived in England for centuries would not recognize it now. Before we even got to the technological advancements, just on a heritage cultural level, they wouldn't understand it, wouldn't recognize it. It'd be foreign to them because they're now the foreigners. That may be what happens here. It may just be that we've got too many weapons of mass destruction. We've got too many people still with the discretionary income to prop up a lot of, you know, cheap labor and slave labor around the world. And so this husk known as the United States of America maybe marches on much longer than any of us think. But the essence of it, the substance of it, those things that made it an exceptional country are gone and will never return. So in Revelation 3, now this doesn't apply on a nationalistic basis, but I'm going to use this to draw a biblical metaphor. I think it's in Revelation 3, Jesus says to one of the seven churches there in Asia Minor or modern day Turkey, he says, go back and do the former things. Or as Todd likes to say, quoting Jack Shepherd, we have to go back. Go back and do the former things you did before. Otherwise, I will come to you and take away your lampstand. So if you went to Turkey today, you could find evidence and remnants of those seven churches of Asia Minor from the first century that were there once. The husk is there, but the lampstand is gone. The light has been snuffed out. That's kind of what I'm talking about. That could be our fate, that we are the walking dead. But we're not a special country, and we never have been. We once were an exceptional one, and we're debating now whether that will continue to be the case.
Next, we have this from BJ Settle. What are your thoughts on attending a big church that has multiple campuses? I don't attend the main campus and watch from a different campus on screen. Preacher preaches from the Bible, and I'm able to pay attention very well. Last week's sermon was on idolatry, and I feel you would have enjoyed it.
Right now, we attend a church that has multiple campuses, in the interest of full disclosure. On a principle level, I'm against it. I view it as franchising your church and not planting churches. I think the goal should be to plant churches, not franchise yourself. And that the goal should be to find people in the communities that you're going to that have the that have an anointing to preach the word. I think it's very difficult for people to go to a pastoral figure for guidance in their lives, that you've stripped the respect that comes with the preaching of God's word from them. And you just can't be readily available to people. You're not omnipresent. You're in a singular place at a time. And the idea of making yourself even available to everybody within your large campus congregation, as much as they may need you, is a challenge that requires, I'm sure, some form of delegation, let alone in places that geographically that really just becomes impossible to add that personal touch. So I'm not in favor of it. In the case of the church we go to that does it, I have discovered so few places where the pastor knows what time it is and clearly communicates that from the pulpit, that for our family, that is our number one priority right now, is to belong to a church that does that. And so the secondary matter I have a disagreement is not as relevant to me as my what our family's primary spiritual need is, which is to belong to a church led by a pastor who knows what time it is, takes that seriously, takes discipleship seriously. And frankly, if it goes down, are we aligned with people that are down there with us rather than are we just hoping that they don't betray us, let alone are they even going to show up? So those are, for our family, our priorities right now. But as a general rule, I am in opposition to it. I think that you should seek to plant churches, not franchise them.
Linda Marshall is next. How does the announcement that Sean Patrick Flannery will be back in his role for the new Boondock Saints movie affect the continuation of the Nefarious series?
I don't know. So, I don't know. I am sure that given what I know we are planning from a story perspective, this could not be made without Sean. So I'm sure that I would be shocked if this was made without him on our end, you know, but we've got scripts to finish and money to raise, you know, so, but I don't know the answer to that question. We were actually hoping to maybe finalize some of these details here as we get closer to summer, but I don't know. Good question. I don't know, but I'm happy for him. I know I'm happy for a lot of you that I know love those movies. And This was rumored to happen a couple of years ago. I'm not sure why it did not. Maybe COVID delayed it, some other scheduling things. I don't know. But, you know, it's something that he deserves. He's an incredible actor.
All right, this one's spicy. This is from Stephen Moderos, who asks, is it a good idea to give a platform to Greg Locke? I'm sure you all know the history with his ex-wife and his newfound friend, Benny Hinn.
I think we will have a conversation that addresses the fundamentals of what people want to know about these kinds of ministries. And if we don't, that's on me and not Greg Locke. I think that by the time this series is over, everyone's going to be mad. I mean, you guys know what is coming. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think by the time this series is over, whichever theological camp you're in, you're going to be upset. Now, why did I made this choice. I selected the guest solely on my own. Why did I do this? Because in accordance with what it's going to be like studying Romans. This is going to be a very challenging study. I don't think people truly understand. And that's what we're going to talk about on Thursday. I mean, this is, other than Revelation, this is the most debated book of the New Testament. And maybe other than Revelation, it might be the most debated book of the Bible. It is a book that people of both unbelief and lukewarm to nominal belief alike don't want to go anywhere near. And since that latter group is a lot of what's in our churches today, that's also why it doesn't get preached in our churches. And there's no way that we're going to be able to do that book any form of justice at all without stepping on toes, including one another's and our own. Okay. And so the goal of these long form conversations is to give the people that are leaders in these various areas an opportunity to either explain themselves or hang themselves. And that'll be up for you guys to decide. I will tell you, I don't believe in cessationism, meaning the idea that the gifts of the Holy Spirit died out with the apostles. There's nothing in the Bible, I think, that teaches that. Nothing. I think at best you have to come up with things that you think infer it. I'm not a cessationist, but I do think that many of the criticisms cessationists have of charismatics are biblical. So I don't think cessationism is biblical. I do think many of the criticisms cessationists have of charismatics are biblical. I think charismatics, as a rule, do a terrible job policing themselves and one another. And that matters greatly whether you're a charismatic or not, because basically Pentecostals are now what the Southern Baptist Church used to be. The Southern Baptist Church used to be the largest influence sector of evangelical Christianity in America. It's not now. Maybe it can be again. You know, it tried to die once before and was brought back by men of God way back in the day. Maybe that can happen again, but it's diminished itself quite a bit. It has fallen prey to turf wars and Trump wars and things of that nature, and just frankly is nowhere near as relevant in the culture war as it was 20 or 30 years ago. In many respects, Pentecostals are now, charismatics are now the ones culturally holding the line. And you mentioned the name Benny Hinn. I think he's an absolute heretic without any question whatsoever. Absolute false teacher. And so the problem is, if charismatics are not going to police themselves, if they're not going to hold themselves to a standard other than every outburst, every exclamation is some new wind of the Holy Spirit, then we're really in deep doo-doo culturally, because they're the last major denomination of evangelicalism holding the rope. They're the last one. So that's why I think it's important to hear what an emerging and leading figure within that movement has to say. And then you can make up your own mind what you think. But I can. We're gonna do one on eschatology later this year, and a lot of you are gonna send me notes. I can't believe you gave that guy a platform. I can't believe he wanted to say. You know, I mean, I'm gonna treat you like adults. I mean, I have some responsibility of what I think I should lend our platform to and other things. But for the, you know, but we get outside of things like that, which harms children and things of that nature. We're going to treat you like adults, and then you can give us an adult reaction of whether you thought we did an ample job of our own jobs. And I'm totally okay with that.
Final question for some conversational whiplash. Stacy Sorey says, should Pete Rose be in the Baseball Hall of Fame?
I used to joke for years when I was in sports talk radio, you could always tell when the host was out of things to talk about because he debates should there be a college football playoff and should Pete Rose be in the Hall of Fame. Well, one of them, we're in that world now. First of all, Pete Rose is in the Hall of Fame. Okay. That's a misnomer. He's not been inducted. He's not enshrined. There is not a plaque with his name on it wearing either a Phillies or likely Cincinnati Reds or even a Montreal Expos hat. Okay, but his exploits are recognized in the Hall of Fame. They do acknowledge that someone beat Ty Cobb's 4,191 hits, and his name is Pete Rose of the Cincinnati Reds. That those things are acknowledged. His exploits are included. He just hasn't been enshrined. Okay, so I've got 75,000,000,000 other things that I need to be more worried about than that. If they don't want to enshrine him because he broke the cardinal rule and lied about it at the time, I don't have a problem with that. If they want to say, hey, you know, he's done his pittance and views on sports wagering are different than they were in 1989 when Bart Giamatti suspended him for life, I'm okay with that too. And I long for a simpler time where I thought I had the benefit of exhausting emotional energy on this topic once more.
Todd, your thoughts?
Hey, I just wish the Catholic Church would still excommunicate people like the Baseball Hall of Fame does. We might stand a chance then. That'd be all right.
I just wish, and I wish I would have just given his answer. I like the answer Todd gave. Yeah. Let's strive to be as earnest in defending our values and principles as the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame is.
Indeed. It's a start.
Back at it again tomorrow with a special evergreen. Until then, Romans 8:28.